My name's Ashley. I'm an addict. No, I was joking. My name's Marisha, and I'm an addict. And it feels, am I supposed to stand here or over here? I don't know what's going on. It's weird. Move the mic. Okay, there we go. I just got really emotional sitting there listening to the readings, and one of the coolest things that I've noticed about this convention, which is something that we don't do where I live, is that you guys stand and you pray, and everyone takes their hats off. And I mean, I'm from Maple Ridge, British Columbia, which is not very far, but it's a totally different, yeah, Maple Ridge. It's just super respectful, and I've never seen that. I've never seen everybody stand and take their hats off, and it just, it leads me to believe that, like, we're really praying in the newcomer. Like, we're really praying in the person that's suffering, that's out there. And taking it a little bit more seriously. Like, I close my eyes, I have to stand there, and I really, I just get emotional every time. And you guys do it. Like, I don't know how many times I've done it today, and I've been emotional every time. It just, I hope you guys know how special that is. And that's something that I've only ever experienced in Edmonton. Like, what the fuck? What the fuck, Edmonton? It's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. Also, do you notice how handsome Gary looks in his suit tonight? Yeah, Gary. Yeah, Gary. So Mickey and Marcel have been telling me, like, you got to introduce us for a half an hour. Like, spread it out. Like, talk as long as you... I should bring literature and read, like, this harsh, you know, thing. So I can talk for a little bit because I can talk. And I do have a lot of experience in Narcotics Anonymous. And I do have a lot of experience with addiction and with friendships. And friendships that really matter. And really the opposite of addiction is connection. And if it wasn't for you guys, like, I certainly would not be to where I am today. I mean, I might be clean. I doubt it. I'd probably be selling weed or in jail or I don't even know what I would be doing, but it wouldn't be fucking spiritual, I'll tell you that right now. And even if I wasn't using it, wouldn't be spiritual. And so because I'm here, like, you guys teach me how to be a better woman. You teach me how to be a better mom. And now I'm a grandma. And, like, yeah. Oh, I was going to say something super inappropriate. I might go back to that. I might circle back to that inappropriate comment, but I'm just going to hold it for a second because I found the filter. So, like, 2 minutes before I got up here, my son FaceTimed me with my little granddaughter. He's like, what do you want to eat tomorrow for dinner, Mom? Like, I want you to come over for dinner tomorrow night, and I want you to play with your granddaughter. And this was a little boy that was taken from my care when he was 5 years old because I had just come home from the hospital and I had had the baby that I had just birthed taken away as well because I used when I was pregnant. And so this little boy never grew up with his mama. He never came home. My daughter did come home. And so now I have, like, this new chance, and I really keep saying this a lot, like, God said here you get to love again. God said here you get to love in a way that you weren't able to with your children. And I love those grandkids, man. Like, there is nothing more important than those little grandkids. And I hope that you get to experience that love. If you've ever felt like you haven't loved to your full potential, if you have kids or parents or siblings that you feel like you just didn't love enough because you weren't fucking capable because you were fucking high, because you were fucking burning your life down, because drugs made it impossible for you to love the way that you're supposed to. And I tell you, like, I got just goosebumps all over my body when I think about how much love I have inside. And I just started experiencing that. And my son and I don't talk about him not coming home. We just swoosh it under the rug. We don't talk about it. It's just like one of those things. But now he gets to watch me be this safe grandma. I get to hold them and my arms are safe. Where before, I mean, smoking crack and doing heroin was way more important than being a parent, just way more important. And I was stuck in a cycle where I didn't really care. And I, the more that I didn't care, the more I had to use. And we all know that. And so, you know, I share that because I know that Mickey and Marcel understand. I know that they understand what it's like to have children and in addiction, and now what it's like to have grandchildren. And Mickey and Marcel, I met them about 10 years ago, and we have done some pretty amazing things. And, you know, you get clean and you stay clean and you're here for a bit. And just like addiction doesn't care if you are a doctor or a lawyer or a junkie, like addiction does not care. We don't care, like, or addiction does not care how much money you have or not, the color of your skin, the size of your feet. Same with recovery. Recovery and life, let's just talk about life. Life doesn't care if you got it all together, man. Life just happens. And in life, there is a lot of pain, a lot of pain. And what we have going for us is that we have each other. But what we also have going against us is that we got nothing to numb the pain, nothing, right? So that's when we come to meetings and we like snot all over the place and we don't know what to do because we're in a divorce, or we don't know what to do because our children are in addiction, or we don't know what to do because our dad just died. We don't know what to do because our kids just died. How do we, as a fellowship, come together when shit like that happens? And so Mickey and Marcel are going to share about that and share about how they get through those tough times without picking up, without any mind or mood altering drugs. And then how we can continue to like love our life. And one thing that we have been blessed and cursed with is this ability to travel, man. This ability to travel all over the world. All over the world. And so we ended up at an NA convention in Egypt, riding fucking camels in front of the pyramids. Like junkies, you guys. Junkies on camels in front of the pyramids at an NA convention. Woo! In Egypt. Like, what the hell? Amazing. Amazing. And like, I didn't want to leave the gas station bathroom. So, last year for Marcel's 100th birthday, we went to Barbados for an NA convention. And this was really cool because the convention was outdoors and it had the sea right there. And there was all of these addicts from all over came to Barbados and we had this NA convention. And those are just a couple different places that we've been together as friends. And yeah, like if you don't think that you can get out of Edmonton, let me tell you, like make that a choice. Like I want to travel to wherever. Next weekend is Kelowna. You know, like, yeah, Kelowna. But we can go anywhere and do anything. We can do anything, anything. And even if the worst thing possible happens to you in your recovery, we are here to help you. And bad things are going to happen if you stay clean because life just happens. Right? Life just happens. And together we stay clean. Mickey and Marcel have been in addiction together. I don't know how the fuck they stayed clean together, but they're going to tell us. So come on up.
Using this mic or those ones?
What mics are we using?
Okay. This one.
I'm Mickey and I'm an addict. Great to be clean and great to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you, Marisha, for she's about 15 minutes shy. I wanted her to keep on going. The longer she talks, the less we have to. Oh, fuck, right? First, I just want to thank the committee for inviting us down to share some of our experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, like, I'm so passionate about Narcotics Anonymous, right? Like, man, I never thought of somebody like me, a junkie like me, a back alley junkie from East Hastings could stop using dope and find a new way to live, right? And I share that, and I fucking feel emotional, and I'm full of goosebumps because, man, I just remember what it was like being on, like, death's doorstep, right? You know, and really thinking that it wasn't possible, right? So this is, like, the second time Marcel and I have, like, shared together and, like, gone back and forth. And I don't know, last time I feel like we kind of, I don't know, felt like we blew it a little bit. But we planned it. We wrote things down. We made this big plan. And this time we're just like, you know what? Higher power's got us. And we're just going to, you know, just see how things turn out, right? So before we start... I just want to share a little bit about who we are, just so you know, right? So Marcel and I met in 2001, okay? Marcel's been clean since September 2008, and I've been clean since December 2009, right? You know? Okay. I heard someone sharing earlier that they were asking, like, old-timers to come and speak, and Marcel and I are like, we're just still babies compared to everybody else that was sharing, right? But I mean, I wanted to share that because I think the important part is if you do the math, it shows you how long we were in addiction together. And we'll share a little bit about what that was like and then how we got clean and stuff. But before, Marcel's going to start, but I just wanted to read something. Where is it?
To where you put it.
Well, I know, but I took a picture, so I wouldn't forget. Right? So I was looking at the program, and I turned it over, and I was reading the back. And it just kind of really stuck out, right? It says, like, with the picture, whatever you call that thing. Cool. I know, but I mean, it's a picture. It's a picture of a fish. Okay. So it says here, the koi fish symbolizes perseverance, resilience, and personal growth. They are known for swimming upstream. They reflect the strength to keep moving forward despite challenges. In recovery, it's not about perfection. It's about persistence. One day at a time. And when I read that, I was like, holy shit, like that just like really describes what our recovery has been like, and you'll hear a little bit about that. So our plan is today is if you have any reservations, our intention is to fuck them up. Okay? So Marcel.
Can you hear me? I'm an addict. My name is Marcel. I got a little emotional if you didn't get that. It might happen again. If I stop talking, it's because I want to cry. And I try to hide it. Because I don't have no problem crying. So first of all, yeah, I'd like to thank the committee again. And what an awesome job. If, you know, if you had a problem with how this convention went, get on the committee next year. Because it's a lot of hard work. We know we've been on conventions together. But what I'd like to do is ask if anybody's 90 days and under in this room right now. Would you please stand up? Keep it going. A bit louder. No, a little bit louder. We can do better. Thank you. So this is the love that I received at my first meeting. The SPAD today, which was read this afternoon, got me right in the heart. Because that's what happened to me at my first meeting. You loved me. And that's what I needed. Because I didn't feel loved. I didn't love myself. You talk about me in the basic text, in chapter 2. the purse-snatching junkie. I was one of those. And I hated myself when I got to Narcotics Anonymous. So before I got to Narcotics Anonymous, how's that? Before I got to Narcotics Anonymous, well, before I met my wife, there's a whole lot of stuff which I'm not going to talk about. But, so I met my wife in a little town in Penticton called Penticton. in BC called Penticton. I'm not nervous, okay? Anyway, so I ended up in Penticton. I was running away from myself. I was running away from, you know, like I went from town to town, from province to province, you know, thinking there was going to be no drugs there. And the pattern was I would build up my life and then I'd use and I'd lose it again. And I ended up in Penticton and I found the love of my life, you know, coming out of the water on this beach. And I didn't know. I didn't know the depth of destruction and pain that was going to happen in the next 8 years. Because I fell in love, and I fell in love with an idea that this was going to work out. And 25 years later, we're getting married in September, okay?
Make sure he was the right one.
It took that long for her to fucking make up her mind. No, I had to get divorced, and then she had to get divorced because we were both married, but to different people. So now we're going to marry each other. Anyways, we used together for 8 years. At least 8 years. And, you know, there was some destruction. I got punched in the face quite a few times. You know? There was some violence. I did things that went totally against my fucking morals. You know, things that, you know, the purse-snatching junkie, the worst. I thought I was the worst fucking person. And you know, one day at the end of the road, you know, the last time that, okay, we built everything up and then we lost it again because we started picking up drugs and using and we couldn't stop using. And that's it's the first one that gets me. It's I can't stop after that. And 4 months behind on rent and we can't live together because we're going to kill each other. So I had to go. Right?
I got one.
I had to go. And the end of the road for me ended up underneath a bridge with a needle in my arm trying to kill myself. And I found the room of Narcotics Anonymous the next day. Go ahead.
Already? I thought you were going to go for 15 minutes.
It's your turn.
So this is where we need two mics because
I'll decide how long I go.
Because I have to lean over the podium so I can speak in the mic. And I feel like every time I take my turn, I have to announce myself all over again or something. Like I'm Mickey and I'm an addict.
Yeah, hi.
Jeez.
Left you hanging, eh?
Yeah, you did. Right? This is it's a hard thing to do, to try to feed off each other's, shares and stuff, right? So I just want to share, a little bit about that part, right? Like, Marcel shares a lot about, he didn't share a lot. It was for five minutes, but shared a bit about some of the chaos and the toxicity of, what addiction was for us, right? I just remember meeting him. I had actually escaped from prison when we met, and right? It was easy back then, right? BCCW, right? Move to the open living unit, and then when they do meds, you just run to the river and keep going, right? So that's what I did, right? But yeah, right. And I was hiding out on the beach in Skaha Lake in that little town in Penticton, called Penticton. You know, but I was like, I was there hiding out, right? And I was married and I was with another person and I had like left and came there and then we met. And I just remember thinking like, man, this guy's so nice. He's so sweet. He's so kind. And we had no idea in that moment that each other, like that we were addicts. Like I knew I was, and he knew he was, but we didn't know each other were, right? And like, and that's where the story started, right? The minute we realized what we both really love to do is to get loaded, right? And, you know, our story takes us to the downtown east side. And I'm sitting here, like, so my little brother's here today. My little brother is not an addict. He's come to, like, you know, hear me share and listen, you know, listen to a bit to our story. And I was like, fuck, a little part of me was like, man, like, he doesn't even know half the shit that, like, occurred in my addiction, right? Like, he didn't get to see like a whole lot of what that looked like because I didn't come around a whole lot, right? And you know, I'd show up occasionally, so I'm like, a little part of me's like, man, I'm gonna say some things here that like you have no idea about, right? But you know what? I'm not ashamed today because of Narcotics Anonymous, like I don't do those things anymore, right? Like I don't escape from jail anymore. Right? I don't even go there anymore, right? Fuck, that stopped, believe it or not, just over 16 years ago, right? Like, going to prison stopped. Well, no, I lie, because I actually went and turned myself in when I was a year clean and spent another night in city cells, right? But, yeah, so Marcel got clean before I did, right? You know, he talks about his little story under the bridge, and I thought he was going to expand a little bit on that, but he maybe will after, right? And I didn't come here thinking Narcotics Anonymous was for me. I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous while I was incarcerated. I attended meetings. I don't know if any of you know, like a person by the name of Dude, but I remember that person very well from when I like went to a panel presentation or to a meeting in there, and then seeing them like years later at a woman's retreat and thinking, holy fuck, like you were there like my very first meeting when I was in jail, and like here you are still clean, and I remember that, but. When I went to meetings in there, I did not go because I was like excited to stop using dope. I didn't go because I was like, you know, yay, I want to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. Like I went because I thought it would get me out a little earlier. It looked good on paper, and you know, so hence why I escaped, because I really didn't want to stay clean, right? And you know, I just wanted to get out and get loaded, and I had been given some cash in there, and like I was, the minute the cash, like while I was incarcerated, it was in my pocket. Well, it wasn't in my pocket, but I won't tell you where it was, right? But the minute I had it, I was like, it was like immediately, like the wheels were turning, right? Like, how the fuck do I get out of here a little sooner, right? Because I just wanted to get high. Right. And, you know, and then I met Marcel and, you know, and away it went. Right. And he decided to get clean and I wasn't ready. And I went back down to Vancouver and, you know, went back to doing what I knew best. Right. Which was shooting to open back alleys and standing on street corners waiting for strangers to pick me up. Right. And I just remember, like, hoping on a daily basis. Like, we talk a lot about hope in Narcotics Anonymous, right? But there's that little bit of hope that I had, like, when I was using, and the hope wasn't the same, right? Like, my hope on a daily basis was like, fuck, I hope I get in this guy's car, and I hope he, like, slits my throat, or I hope he, like, does something, because I don't want to live like this anymore, right? And that was the kind of hope that I had, right? You know, I'd cross the street and I'd be like, man, like I hope some car like you know goes speeding through the lights and like, you know, like runs me over, because I don't want to live like this anymore. And I was just way too fucking terrified to put down dope and take a look at myself and what I was going to have to, the feelings I was going to have to face, right? Marisha mentioned a bit about kids and all my children. I had five kids, and every single one of them was removed from my care. I never got a single one of them back, right? And that was some shit I didn't want to face, right? Like, I didn't want to face that pain. So the easier option seemed like if I just die before I get clean, then I don't have to face it, right? And fucking thank you, Narcotics Anonymous, for showing me a different way to live, right? You know, so I'm going to allow Marcel.
Allow.
Yeah, I'm allow. Well, that's how it goes, right? I allow him to do things today.
What the fuck was funny?
When I say stop, you need to stop, okay?
Fuck me. Anyways, let's get into this, eh? Are we excited about recovery? No, fuck off. Come on. When I'm not excited about recovery, the disease is excited about the relapse. Okay? I'm either going up or I'm going down. There's no sitting still. It's a continuous uphill journey. It says that in fucking chapter 7. And I believe that. Because I've had those times when I thought I was here, but I started going backwards, picking up the resentment, picking up whatever else, no drugs, but picking up whatever, because I didn't want to deal with myself, because, you know, I was this angry kid, just a little kid, you know, 8, 9 years clean, but I was just a little kid. I'm just a little kid now, but, so anyways, yes, I was underneath the bridge, and I tried to kill myself, okay, and, like, I got picked up by the cops, they threw me in the drunk tank. Okay, and about 5 hours later, he came and said, okay, you got to go. And I said, fuck that shit. I don't want to go. I don't have anywhere to go. I'm just going to go out there and kill myself, because that's how I had lost all hope, all of it. And, you know, the pattern that I had was, you know, well, okay, well, I'll just go get a job and I'll get a new place and, I'll start my life over. I could have done that. But the cop, he said, okay, go. I can send you over here. The gospel mission, and it might be able to help you, right? And I was ready. I was ready to take some direction from somebody, okay? I didn't want to do this anymore because I fucking hated myself. And, like, I was pointed in some directions, and I took it, okay? And I ended up in a recovery house. It was 3 minutes away from a meeting, and I started going to the meeting. But the very first meeting was the best, okay, because I announced myself as new, and there was, yay, and then I got up to get a fob, and I got a hug, and he said into my ear, I love you, keep coming back, and it was like, what, you don't know me. You have no idea who I am. You don't know what I've done. And if you knew, you'd be like everybody else in my life. Beat it. Get out of here. We don't care what you have. We don't want you around here. You're a nuisance. And for the first time in my life, I felt like, wow, this guy fucking loves me. At least he says he does. And nobody's ever said that in my life. Through the work of the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, I realized that not once did my mom said, I love you. They didn't hug me. They didn't do any such thing when I was a kid. And it was like, holy fuck, that was the thing that I needed the most. Right? You loved me until I learned to love myself. Okay? And you said, come, please come back. And if anybody thinks that, you know, I'm thinking about using, I'm going to have to use, it's bullshit. Because I've thought about using, and I didn't. Right? I didn't. I just kept going to meetings. And, like I was tricked by a couple of women joined this home group. Okay, so I joined this home group, and there was a couple of chicks there that, like, they tricked me into sticking around after the meeting for a business meeting. I'm like, okay. I don't know what that is, but I'll stick around. All right, this could be good. And then nominated me to be the secretary. I was like, what the fuck is that? Don't worry, do you have a computer? Yes, I do. Okay, just take our direction, we'll help you. Okay, And I was the best damn secretary of that home group for that time. You know, like I was on time, taking great notes, and it was, I felt like I was needed for the first time in my life. And I made a commitment. And since that day, when I make a commitment, I keep the damn commitment. It's not just for a day. It's another 2 months, and you've done the commitment. Well, I'm going to get another one. Because that shit keeps me clean. Just like the SPAD reading talks about the service that we do, and it becomes about you. At first it was, look at me, fuck, I'm great. Yeah, I got friends, I feel good, I look good. But I wasn't doing any step work, okay? And I was angry. And all of those things that I brought into Narcotics Anonymous, all the shame and the guilt, you know, like I got two kids of my own, twin boys, and I lost them when I lived in Calgary. And, you know, like I had shame because I did things with them, around them, and all of that stuff. If you knew, what would you think about me, right? And, like, I had to take a chance to trust someone in NA that believed in me, that wanted to help me. And I, like, okay, I'll do that. I'll get a sponsor. And I'll start writing steps. And like I wasn't, you can't tell me that I'm going to change just by, you know, doing this stuff. Right? And everybody that, oh, you got to do the steps because we changed. Well, I don't know. I don't know what you did in your addiction. I don't know anybody in these meetings at all. And like, you can't tell me it's going to work. I don't know how much you've changed. But then, you know, like, I back up a little bit, and, like, I was about a month clean, and Mickey came and found me in there somewhere. And, but she found out where I was. And, not the little town in Pennington, no. But, so, anyways, however it happened, we met. And I told her, well, I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. I found this program that helps me stay clean, and it's working. I'm not using drugs. And so we had a plan to meet on the weekend, and she never showed up. She never showed up. I was in a recovery house, and I was hopping on my bike, and I was going to go find her. I knew where she was. And the guys in the recovery house said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going to go find her. She never showed up. I'm going to go find her, see what she's doing. No, you're not. What are you going to do? Help her use? So I changed my mind, and I didn't go. And that, you know, like, I fucking love this theme, swimming against the current, because, like if you're not swimming against the current, again, you're going backwards. And, like, we have done so much swimming against the current. And that was one of them. Like, her clean days is 2009, mine's 2008. So that whole time she was relapsing and coming back and relapsing and coming back. And the people that get tricked me into, you know, sticking around for this business meeting, they fucking helped me stay clean. They said, you don't need to go and see her. You don't need to go and find her. You need to just tell her that if you want to see me, you can see me at a nooner, or you can see me at a 7 o'clock meeting, or you can see me at the coffee shop where we all are. You don't go by yourself. And I fucking listened. Because September 9th, I made my day. The most important day of my life. More important than anything. And I kept that day. And it was because of the people that came before me that said, you cannot help her because she's using. And like, dude, she'd come into meetings and, right? And like, I wanted so bad to believe that she wasn't using. And she said, hold on, I'm not using. Right? And she'd come up with whatever. And I have to ask other members, do you think she's using? Because like, I just wanted so bad that she got clean. And I had hope. And all I had to do was surrender. And the only way that I could surrender was to just write some steps And I started doing that. And you know, I had a sponsor, and I went through 1, 2, and 3, and I got a different sponsor. I'll do 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3 again. And, you know, it's like, oh, fuck it. No, I've got 1, 2, 3. I'm good, right? And, 1, 2, 3, right? I wasn't changing until somebody said, Marcel, if you don't change, your clean date's going to change. And I didn't understand that. And I lived in a recovery house for over a year. And then one day, you know, my wife was a month clean. And we had an opportunity to move in together. And I felt something different. I said, okay, let's do this. Right? Let's do this. So we moved in together. Along with 1, 2, 3 of her children and a grandchild in a two-bedroom in a basement suite. Things were great. I didn't have to look at myself. She didn't have to look at myself, at herself, or me. And it was chaos. One by one, the children went. She kicked them out. And she started writing some steps. She got to step 12, and she left. Something changed. She changed right in front of me. And I was no longer, you know, attractive. She needed something different herself. So she moved out. I was crushed. But I'm so I'm so grateful for that to have happened, because I bought into the 12 steps, because for the first time I saw something that worked in someone that I knew that changed. And the only thing that she was doing that I wasn't doing was writing the fucking steps. So Marcel, this works. You know what I mean? I wrote a set of steps, and we moved back in together. That's all it took. I begged. I was on my knee. Well, maybe one day we can be together, right? No. It was always no. I had to surrender. I had to surrender to the program. Like, I had to do what other people did. And like, this is a 12-step program. It's not a go-to-meetings, be-of-service program, although it's part of it. Like I had service-based recovery. So I was all about service, blah, blah. Give me some more. Because, like, I was grateful for that. Anyways, can I take over from there?
I think you're almost done.
Okay, all right.
I was, like, thinking he's going to be to the end of the story before...
We got lots of time.
before he finishes.
Well, this is hard.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah,
no, so I'm going to back up a little bit because Marcel went, I'm already clean. Right?
My story.
Right? Told you, no, this stuff's hard. I'm going to.
Yeah.
So Marcel talked a little bit about that, you know, when I got clean portion that I'll back up a little bit on. And, you know, when I was talking before, I was talking about that hope, right? That hope that I felt in addiction, right? That hope that talked about, you know, that hope for death, that hope for, you know, the end of my life, that hope for, you know, I didn't have hope for change, right? And that was the thing I didn't have, right? And, you know, when I came back and Marcel was getting clean, I went to my first meeting and I remember looking around that room and I remember thinking, man, You guys have no fucking idea what it's like to be me, right? Because I was looking at all the differences, right? And all I could see was happy people or smiling people. And I thought, man, like, you no idea what it's like to be consumed with my guilt, my shame, my self-loathing, my hatred, my desire to, you know, not be here. You don't know, right? And the people that look like they might know, like, how are they going to help, right? But what happened is I was watching Marcel, because I used to blame him, right? Like, I blamed him for a long time, right? Like, if only he would stop, right? If only he wasn't so messed up, I could stop using, right? Like, fuck, it's always him who wants to pick up the next bit, right? Well, no, we flipped a coin, right? Yeah, like we flip over and over until it, you know, landed where we wanted it to, you know. That's how we determined if we were going to stay clean or get loaded that day, right? You know, and I was watching him stay clean through some of those things he talked about, right? I just dribbled, right? But I was watching him stay clean. So I was like, holy shit, like maybe there's something to this Narcotics Anonymous program. Because I'd been coming to meetings and sitting in the back and, you know, staring at the ground. And I'd show up the minute the meeting started and I'd leave the minute the meeting ended. And I'd go home and I'd be like, fuck this place, man. You know, nobody gives a shit about me. And I would go into full-on victim mode, right? You know, no one cares if I'm at the meeting or not. Like, nobody reaches out. Like, it was like a whole thing, right? I didn't realize I was being a victim until I started writing some step work. And then I was like, holy, right? But I wanted to blame somebody else. And I would blame Narcotics Anonymous, right? And it gave me an excuse to go out and get loaded. But I continued to watch him no matter how many times I got loaded and the times that I did that he didn't come looking. And a portion that sticks out the most to me is like I remember calling him one day because he said to me, when you get serious and you really want to stay clean, I'll be there and I'll help, right? And so I was in a phone booth because, yeah, we had phone booths, right? Well, yeah, phone, that seems like a long time ago. And I had a rig full of fucking heroin and I was going to do myself in. And I remember calling him and saying, I'm ready now. I'm ready. If you don't come and save me, I'm going to kill myself right now, right? And he did was like keep me on the phone. He wouldn't come. And I remember being so angry and so resentful, thinking, but you promised, right? Like you promised, like when I wanted it, you'd come. Like, why aren't you coming to save me right now? Right? Like, why aren't you here? And all he did was talk to me and he kept me on the phone. And the minute he had another addict with him, they both came and picked me up and took me to the hospital. Right? And I was fucking resentful for, you know, the good beginning portion, I swear, sorry. You know, the beginning portion of my recovery, like I remember feeling so resentful because I hung on to that, like, how dare you not come and save me mentality, right? You know, so, you know, and so that brings me back to that hope part, right? So when I made that decision, like I remember waking up that morning and my clean day's December 1st, 2009. And I remember, I don't say that for the clap. I don't say that for the claps, right? Because like we're just babies compared to all the other people that were speaking today, right? You know. But I say that because it is the most important day. But I remember that day so vividly because I did not intentionally make a decision to stop using that day, right? Like I had made so many damn decisions, right? Like so many times I was like, yeah, after this bit's gone, like I'm done. And you know, wait, I just got my way. Well, okay, when I run out of this money, it was just this repetitive thing. And I never consciously made a decision that morning. And I just remember waking up and like taking a breath and going, holy fuck, I don't have to use today. Right? And like believing it for the first time, like I truly believed it. Right? And that was that first bit of hope that I felt in Narcotics Anonymous. Because I didn't feel it going to meetings high, right? Like I didn't feel it. I don't know why, but I didn't feel it. Right? I didn't feel it showing up to the meeting like just when it started and like leaving the minute it ended. I didn't feel it, right? You know, like I didn't feel it at all. But I felt it that morning, right? And I just knew that I didn't ever have to use again just for that day. And I just believed it, right? And I didn't know what it was going to look like, and I didn't know how, like, you know, like recovery was going to go or what was going to happen. I just knew that if I went to a meeting, you know, and I called somebody on that stupid phone list that I thought was stupid when I got it, because I don't want to call you women. I don't like women. I don't have good experiences with women. But if I just use that phone list and I call you, And I do some of the things that I've been hearing shared in meetings for this year and a bit that I've been coming and sitting around and, you know, like sitting in the back thinking about how I can use successfully or not blow my life up, you know, like some of that shit sunk in. So they say that if you bring your body, your mind will follow. And like, it was like my mind arrived that day, right? Like it, and I haven't had to use since that day, right? And man, like, how does a back alley junkie like me stop using dope, right? I'll tell you how. I went to meetings, right? I went to meetings every day. I got on my bicycle, and I'd ride my bicycle because he stopped letting me drive the car because I didn't have a driver's license, right? That was another resentment, right? You know? Yeah, you're just doing that because you're mad, right? But I was like, but because he used to give me the car, right? And somebody eventually told him, why are you letting her drive the car? She doesn't have a driver's license. So he stopped letting me drive the car, right? So I'd ride my bike to meetings, I'd walk to meetings, and I'd do that every single day, right? I'd show up at that meeting, right? And I got involved, right? And I think like that's been the catalyst of what recovery and Narcotics Anonymous has had to offer me, aside from writing the 12 steps, right? Is putting myself in the middle. Right, like from day one, and we'll share a little bit more about like how important, like that connection that happens when you get involved and you do service, like how important that connection has been to our recovery together, you know, like clean and how it's like literally showed up and it saved our lives, right? You know, like just a little bit on. The Marcel talking about the kids, right? Yeah, that was a nightmare. Okay. But you know what, when I started like telling these kids to leave, it was because like through that process of writing the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous, I learned what was okay for me and what wasn't. I learned to set some boundaries through that process, right? My kids were slobs, they were leaving messes everywhere, they were sleeping on my couch, they had attitude, you know, and I thought, like my time comes and I'll make these amends, but at this point, I don't deserve to be treated like shit. I don't owe you something because my addiction was shitty. I'm sorry, and I'm going to show up for you. And I, today, show up the best way that I can, and sometimes that just means if I can drive you somewhere, right, or it depends on, like, the kids, but... so our recovery journey started together after that process, right? And things were, hard. Well, I'll let you share now. What? I don't know, should I go for 15 more minutes? Because I was, go ahead.
Where am I going from there?
I don't know, wherever you left off. Because you started a whole, like, went way past where I was going to go, so.
This is a little tough. I'm just going to tell you right now. Like, if I was sharing by myself, I would start here and I'd end there, but can't do that. So, I said earlier that if I'm thinking about using it, I don't have to. And that wasn't always true for my brain. Right? I was a couple of months clean. I'm going to go back a little bit because, like, I wanted to... I think this is important. I was a couple of months clean and chairing a meeting at our nooner, and someone left a backpack behind, and I was by myself, and I didn't know what to do with the backpack. So I did the thing that most addicts do. I opened it up and checked it out. What's in there? Because I wanted to know. And I found some drugs. Right? Oh, what's this? Oh, well, I know what these are. I'll fuck, take these and put them in my pocket and save them for later. When I go to the recovery house, I'll sleep good. Or maybe I'll get a buzz. Right? But something happened. I don't know what it is, but something happened, and I put them fucking back. And I put the lid on, and I put it in the bag, and I put the bag away. And then a two-minute walk felt like 15 minutes back to the recovery house. And I beat myself up. Why'd you do that? What's wrong with you? And then I took a chance, and I told someone that was at the recovery house, this is what I did. Fuck, what's wrong with me? Mars, there's nothing wrong with you. You just made a different decision. And I was like, what? And if I hadn't said anything, it would have ate me up. I don't know. Maybe I would have used, who knows? But that's not what happened. I told someone. And that's the key, because the secrets keep me sick. You keep going, oh, yeah, you're a piece of shit, because that's what I know. And then the self-pity starts crawling in, and now I'm in trouble, because I go down, and I go down, right? And just a quick story about, like, we're landing in Edmonton, and I got service on my phone, and there's a phone call. It's my tax guy. So I answer. He says, Marcel, it's Craig. I have some bad news. Okay, give it to me. Well, you owe a lot of taxes. Almost $10,000. I was like, fuck. Man. Because I started my own business in 2012, and it's been like, you know, I keep doing the same thing and I expect different results and I don't change. And my wife tells me, you got to change, and I don't change. And it's like, fuck. So anyways, so we get out of the airplane and I'm standing there and my phone call is done. And I looked at my wife and I said, I'm fucking done. I can't do this anymore. I'm going to go work for someone else. Close my business. And I had to say that out loud because it sounds stupid. Because if I'd have kept it in my head, I would have been, like, in trouble. Because I would have been in self-pity. And I needed someone to help me, just like I need someone to help me daily. But I got to let you know. I have to let you know. I have to let you in. So what happened is she encouraged me. And she said it was going to be okay. And today, I know it's going to be okay, because I've been there before, and we've gone through it. I've paid, and I did it again, and then I paid, and I did it again, and I paid, and I keep fucking paying.
Don't go to Thailand.
Because I used my money to go to Thailand. And then I read, why are we here? Because through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. That's my favorite reading, and it's not because of that. And I'll get into that later, why it's my favorite reading. So between Mickey and I, we have 7 children, 11 grandchildren, and 4 of the children are alive. 3 died. We'll get into. There's something about Narcotics Anonymous, you know. I mean, I'll share a little bit about my child, and it pertains to service and my commitment to Narcotics Anonymous and being in the middle and you loving me and helping me, and that's never changed from day one. Right? It was 2015. The cop showed up at my house and let me know that my child had committed suicide. And I was damaged. I was destroyed. Like I was in so much pain. And I was the activities chair for our area. 2 weeks later, his area, I really don't want to fucking go. But I made a commitment to Narcotics Anonymous, and I knew that that's where I needed to be, because I needed to be surrounded by people, because by myself, I'm no good by myself. I need help. And, you know, before the meeting started, I let everybody know that I might be angry, I might bite your head off, but I'm here because I need to be here, because I need help. And we stayed clean. Like, we stay clean in Narcotics Anonymous, and we don't do this by ourselves. Like, people in our fellowship showed up for us. They brought us food. They made sure we went to meetings. They, you know, at times it was too much. Like, we need some time alone. Beat it. You know, but you never stop showing up. And we stayed clean. Right? We stayed clean through that stuff. And Narcotics are not like I can never repay Narcotics Anonymous for what it's done to my life. Like I live a great life today. I get to travel with my friend Marisha and other people in this room, Bill. You know, we get to travel. We get Brad. Travel with Brad too. Jay. God damn it. My wife. Sometimes she goes by herself. Which is good.
Good. I'll tell you about the trip I just booked. So.
I guess you just booked a trip. No, but no, I'm kidding. I'm fucking lost for words of what this program has done for my life. Like I'm deadly serious. Like, for a guy like me that couldn't stop using for 2 minutes, that I stopped using for almost 18 years, is fucking incredible. And for anybody that's here that's new, that's a possibility. We never have to use drugs again, just for today, right? And today I don't go from dumpster to dumpster to dumpster to find fucking whatever it is that I'm finding that I can make a couple of bucks. You know, old stereos that don't work that I think I'm going to bring home and make work that I could sell. You know, that's ridiculous. Like, I don't live like that anymore. Like, I just don't. And, go. Like, I want to feed off you.
He has nothing left to say because I'm going to Mexico alone. No. Oh, Jesus.
You left me hanging, so I left you hanging.
Yeah, our relationship is like purely built off banter, like not even, like, yeah, if you're a fly on the wall, right? And our relationship. So one thing I really appreciate, like about Marcel, is his ability to be vulnerable and to show like what's going on or how he feels or. And he's not afraid to let you see it, right? And that's something I've struggled with my whole recovery, right? Like I have this weird idea in my head that I'm less than, or you know, maybe weaker than if I allow you to see that part of me. But on the flip side, man, when I sit in a meeting and I see the big biker guy sitting in the corner shedding tears, I'm like so envious, and I'm like, man, look how strong that is, right? You know, but I don't allow myself the same grace, right? So it's been something that I'm working on, and I'll backtrack a little bit before Marcel was talking about his son, you know, back in 2015, and that was in July, and prior to that happening, right? And I look at my brother, and this is where I feel the emotion. Damn, I'm not good at this kind of stuff, right? But this is the stuff I'm working on. So when I was 5 years clean, my mom, so our readings say we had to have somebody believed in us and wanted to help us in our recovery. And sometimes that's a Narcotics Anonymous member, and sometimes it's not. And for me, it wasn't. It was my mom, right? Like, my mom was, like, the most generous, kind, loving person. My relationship with her is a relationship that I've never experienced, that I've wanted to carry on with my own daughters, and it hasn't happened. And, you know, so she gave me my cake, my five-year cake, and she lived with us, and, you know, that was in December, and in January, we had the very first knock on the door, and it was a cop, and I was like, God damn, like, they're here, like, I was napping, I don't even nap, and I was like, shit, man, like, am I wanted, because, like, I mean, cops only knock on my door when they're coming to put me in handcuffs, right, so I thought I must have a outstanding warrant, or there must be some reason they're here, because, like, they come here, or they're asking for me. They really must want to, like, take me in, right? And they came to tell me that my mom had died at work. They found her. We do the same kind of work. And they had found her there. And, Yeah, right. She did these overnight things, and I remember in that moment, like, so. I want to backtrack a little bit again, but so. It was expressed to me throughout my recovery, right, that a grateful addict won't get loaded, right? So I had started doing these gratitude lists, right, for the 5 years. I heard somebody else share today or yesterday, my timelines are really shitty, about, like, the importance of these gratitude lists. And I started doing those gratitude lists, and I've been writing them for, like, over five years, you know? And I just remember in that moment thinking, like, holy fuck, Mike, my world was shook and collapsing on the ground and being like, looking at this cop and being like, holy shit, I'm just so grateful right now, right? And the cop was looking at me really weird, like, what do you mean? Like, I just finished telling you that your mom died. But I was like, man, no, you don't get it. My mom left and I'm fucking clean, right? Like, and I just remember experiencing this gratitude and this, like, immense grief that I had felt. And that was my first experience that those two things can coexist, right? You can have gratitude and pain at the same fucking time, right? I know, because I've experienced a lot of that, like, since that day. And I just remember feeling like, and I knew in that moment, like, I didn't have to pick up dope, right? I've been told and taught, like, this for the 5 years I've been clean, right? Go to a meeting, reach out, share with somebody else, right? And, you know, and that's exactly what I did, right, is I picked up the phone, and I went to a meeting, and I remember, so the vulnerability piece is, I remember someone, like, coming up to me and saying, I had to be at the meeting, because I knew I'd see you cry, because I've never seen you cry before, and I remember that kind of hitting home, like, man, like, I feel it a lot, or I have this emotion a lot, and I've been in a meeting a lot where I can feel it, and I'm just like, bite your tongue, like, swallow it down, don't allow other people to see what I think or thought was a weakness, right? Don't let people see the emotion, don't let people see it. But the thing is when I do that, people show up and get to love me through that feeling, right? So when I put on the mask that I've put on, and I still have this tendency to do it, when I put that on, people don't have that opportunity. How you doing, Mickey? Oh, I mean, oh, yeah, man, it's a great day. Everything's good. Now, if I had walked into that meeting that day and just said, oh, yeah, yeah, no, I'm good, right, nobody would have been able to show up and love me as much as I needed to be loved that day, right, because I fucking needed it, right? Like, I had to make the phone calls, and I had to call my brother and my sister and other family members and, like, tell them of this thing. My mom was 63 years old, right? She wasn't ill. We didn't know she was ill. Like, we had no clue. So it was a surprise, right? And, like, and that was kind of like that start, like that first 5 years of recovery was like, we were skating along, man. Like, you know, we were going to meetings. Everything is great. And, you know, and I brought up reservations in a meeting once, and I remember this person sharing about it and saying, like, you know, like, how, like, selfish would it be of me if I had made a decision that day to pick up dope, right? My little brother was hurting. My little sister was hurting. Let me fucking kick you a little harder by getting loaded so you can feel that pain too, right? You know? And that stuck in my head in that moment. It's like, man, I didn't want to create any more pain, you know, in my family that were hurting so much, right? And I knew, like, no matter what, I wasn't going to pick up dope, right, just for today. So I went to a meeting, and I called my sponsor, and I did the things that I did. And then I talked about service a while ago when I talked about the importance of service and that getting in the middle and getting connected. And this is why, right? Because I showed up, and because I was a part of, and so was Marcel, actively a part of our fellowship, right? I didn't just show up at meetings, wait till the meeting was over and bold. You know, it was my responsibility to give back to this program that saved my life, right? I believe that 100%. It's my responsibility to continue to show up here and give back to the program that saved my life. And that, in turn, continued to save my life, right? Because those people and those connections, the strangest people showed up at my door, Right? Like, yeah, fuck. People I don't talk to really or didn't think I had relationships with, people I thought judged me, people I judged, right? Like, showed up at my door. You know, how can we help you stay clean today? What do you need from us? Right? You know? And that is a direct result of, like, being in the fucking middle of the boat, right? Not teetering on the side, you know, not, you know? Like, being immensely a part of this program of Narcotics Anonymous, right? So that's why I continue to show up and do service, right? You know, so, you know, and then, like, it was 6 months later when Marcel's son took his life, right? And it was the same police that showed up at the door, right? And I remember people asking, right, to me or to him, she's still clean? Oh, is he still clean? It's like, yeah, we're still fucking clean. You know, of course we're still clean. Why? Because we keep going to meetings. We keep reaching out. We keep getting involved. We keep showing up for commitments, right? We keep talking about what's going on and letting people know when we need them, right? You know, so, fuck, when I start and I tell you how passionate and how much I love Narcotics Anonymous, or when I share that, you know, my name's Mickey and I'm an addict and I'm grateful to be clean and a member, I share that because, man, that gratitude saved my ass that day, you know, when I fell to the floor and didn't know what it was going to look like the next day or the next week or the next month. I just damn well knew I needed to have some damn gratitude, and I had some in that moment, right? You know, so, yeah. I don't know. It's like a great ending to a really sad story, right?
Okay. Really? Anyways, so I watched my wife go through that process, right? And, like, I watched what happened. I watched like, the going to meetings and people showing up and 1 minute? 1 hour. Okay.
1 hour?
Okay. So we're a half hour left. Okay, so I watched that whole process, and, like, I watched my wife be sad and like, just sad, okay? Because I was with her. And still going to meetings and you know, still participating somewhat in events and that kind of stuff. And that set me up for when it happened to me, because I watched it. I witnessed someone stay clean. So that helped me so much. And when my kid died, the only thing I wanted to do was go to a goddamn meeting. It was a Thursday night. It was my home group. And it started at 7:30, and I found out at what, 5 o'clock, and I was like, I just want to go to the meeting. I just want to go to the meeting. And it was packed. The meeting was packed, and there was one seat left. And I sat down, and why are we here sitting in front of me? And that's what I read. And I had a fucking hard time reading it, especially when it got to the word suicide. Like, I stopped. And I couldn't get it out because I cried, and people waited. They had patience and tolerance, and I finally got the word out, and I finished reading, and it was exactly what I needed to do. You know, I needed to be there to be vulnerable in front of people, because, like, you need to see that, because if you don't see that, you can't help me. I hide in my house, and you can't help me. Anyways, so the process, I believe, for my wife when her mom died is the work of the 12 steps and the writing and sponsorship helped her, okay? But for me, it was different because I felt it was different because my kid killed himself, okay? And I had guilt. Because I was his parent, and I put him through some shit, and if it wasn't because of my life, this might not have happened. And the disease had me for a long time, and I hid in service. I hid in service for a long time, and I think I was about 8 years clean, 8.5 years clean, and my wife went to a world convention in Florida, and she bought me this really nice basic text. She brought it home to me. No, it was for my 10-year. And she gave it to me. It was like, ah, fuck, awesome. Look at this. And she got people to sign it. Okay? And it was a whole whack of signatures. And I was looking at the signatures. Oh, yeah, awesome, awesome. And then a beautiful thing happened. When I was looking at the signatures, I started reading the literature. Because I wasn't working no steps. I was angry. I was resentful. And most of all, I was angry at myself. And I didn't want to do any step work because I might find out that there's really something that it was my fault. That my kid killed himself. And I kept that a secret. I wasn't telling anybody. I was going to meetings and talking about the steps and, you know, this works and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, going home and, you know, we raised a grandson from four and a half years old to 15 or 16. And he was in our life. And this is what I would do. When my wife would leave, I would bully him because I needed to blame someone. And I didn't want to blame myself, and it was his fault, because if I wasn't taking care of this kid, I wouldn't take care of that kid or my other kid. And my other kid would chirp, well, no wonder my brother killed himself. Look at you. This is the kind of father you were. So all of these things were coming in, and I was involved in service. Okay, let's forget about that. I'm just going to do service because I feel good, and I wasn't doing any work on myself. And at 10 years clean, my wife sat me down and said to me, Marcel, I'm not letting you treat me and my grandson this way anymore. If you don't do something, we're leaving. My first thought was, fucking A, awesome. All the money I have will be mine. I can do whatever I want. I can go to whatever meeting I want. I'll be free. And my next thought was, you're going to get loaded, Marcel. You better pick up something. And that's when I grabbed the book, and I, you know, looking at all these signatures. And then chapter 7, there it was. There was a lot of signatures in there, and I started reading it daily and daily and daily, and it saved my damn life. Because, like, I made a decision to pick up a pen and start working on Marcel. Because that's enough. I'm doing it for me. And as I'm writing my steps, you know, all along my other kid is threatening to kill himself. I call the cops, he goes to the hospital, gets out, does it again, threatens and threatens. And my brain all of a sudden goes, God damn it, kid, just fucking get it over with and do it so it can be over. I had this big secret in my head that I don't want you guys to know that I'm thinking this. What kind of a dad am I, right? But I'm thinking it. And that secret got me so, like, the disease had me so bad that I planned on going downtown getting some dope just to kill myself. But I was writing. And I was in step 3. And the cops showed up at my house on a Saturday and told me my other kid was dead. And Narcotics Anonymous showed up for us again, like that. Because Narcotics Anonymous loves me. You said you were going to love me. Back in 2008, you said, we're going to love you. And they loved me and my wife. And I continued to write. And, like, I love my sponsor. My sponsor, some of you know, was my sponsor, Gene, and he can no longer sponsor me. And that took a long time for me to find a new sponsor because he can no longer help me. But he got me through this set of steps, and I got to write down the secrets that I was keeping, and he helped me. He helped me be okay. He helped me find forgiveness, because in all of the other steps that I did, I never put myself on the fucking list, because it was always about you. I'm okay. I'm all right. But I wasn't okay. I needed to forgive myself, and that's the change that happened, and today I love me. I love me. And it's okay. Like, I can take myself out to dinner by myself. I could even take myself out to a movie by myself. I don't, but I could. I might. She could take herself to Mexico. I wouldn't be able to do that. I'd fucking get lost. Anyways, what did they go? Yeah.
Holy, eh? Hold on. So I know that a lot of what's being shared right now is super, like, hard and sad and, you know, probably brings up a lot for people in here. And the reason why we share it is because, like, this topic here, swimming against the current, right, and, like, that little bit that I read from the back of the program, you know, talks about that perseverance and that moving forward and, like, and that's why we share it, because we never had to pick up dope, right? You know, because of Narcotics Anonymous, we never had to get loaded. So we share it because we want you to know, if you don't know or you have a reservation about it, that it's possible to stay clean through anything, right? You know? Woo! You know, and that means, like, if your relationship ends or you lose your job, or you find yourself homeless, or your children die, or your family dies, you don't have to get loaded, right? Like, the people in Narcotics Anonymous are going to save your ass if you allow it, right? And I'm gonna, I have to carry on the little bit of sadness here because I know we only have so much time left, and then I want to make sure that we, like, talk about how great our lives is today. Is, that's bad grammar. Our lives are, you know, today. I was like, well, that was bad. You know, so when Marcel was talking about how between the two of us we have 7 kids, but we only have 4 left, right? So 5 of the children were mine. We never had children together. 2 of them were his, and my kids, his kids too, were addicts. One of his first son died clean, you know, which, like, what a gift that was, right? And my kids are addicts, and I have a daughter who's clean. She doesn't really do recovery anymore, but she's been clean for over 7 years. Yeah. So pray her back into the rooms before she gets loaded, right? Pray her back into the rooms. You know, and I have a daughter, my youngest daughter. All my kids were removed from my care. None of my kids came back. Most of my kids were adopted into other families, like pretty much all of them. And my youngest daughter, hardcore on the streets, addict from the day that I met her. When I, like, our real relationship, she was maybe 12 or 13, and she was dabbling, and by 15, she was on the street, right? So she died at 27. She overdosed last year. It'll be coming up in a couple weeks here. On June 29th, it'll be a year, right? She never found the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, right? You know, and I sit here and I'm thinking about, like, that daughter that doesn't do recovery anymore, celebrating a cake one day, and you know, my daughter walking in, like, being invited, like, come to this cake, right? Come and watch your sister celebrate recovery, right? And she never showed up, and she never showed up. And then, you know, at the very end, when my daughter gets up to share, in walks my daughter, right? You know, she's fucked up, you know, probably bare feet and the whole shebang, and she came walking in, and it was just this big profound moment, like, oh my God, she made it. Like, it was important enough, you know, even though she didn't get here on time, it was important enough for her to show up here for her sister to some degree, right? And yeah, like, I was sharing with a friend on the way here, and we were talking a little bit about, like, that some of those depths of addiction where it's just like, you just kind of know when someone's just not going to stop using, and I just knew, right? And it was like this preparation, right? This preparation for, like, when am I going to get the fucking call? When am I going to get the fucking call, right? And I got the call, you know? And then this is where the gratitude portion comes in. Because I can sit here and I can, like, continuously feel sorry for myself and isolate and hide and tell myself, oh, my God, don't you know? This is the third child that we've lost in recovery. I can't do this anymore. I'm just going to hide, right? You know, I could easily do that. Or I can stop and look and say, you know, where's the gratitude? So my gratitude in that is that I look at the fact that these children aren't in pain anymore, because these children all really suffered, whether it was addiction or mental health, they really suffered, right? You know, I mean, the boys suffered from, like, they had some physical stuff. One had a hip replacement. They were, like, in their early 20s, right? So lots of suffering was happening, right? And that suffering doesn't happen today. And those pieces of those children, like, I carry in here everywhere I go. Right? Like everywhere I go, you know, and I don't have to get loaded. And then I get to share my experience with another addict and how I stay clean through some of these really hard fucking times, right? You know, like I get to share that experience, and like how grateful am I that I didn't go out and get loaded and that I can pass that on to somebody else, because it happens. It happens over and over and over again, right? People in the fellowship lose people that they love, you know, and they have a hard time, and they get to reach out, and they get to hopefully connect with another addict who stayed clean through it. And I have the gift, and Marcella's the gift of being those people sometimes, those people who get to share that, right? So, you know, when that date comes on June 29th in that 1 year, you know what I'm going to be doing that day? I'm going to be sitting in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous thinking about how much I love my daughter and that she's with me in spirit, you know, and that she never found the gift of recovery, but damn, I'm grateful that I did, right? You know, like, damn, like, I found Narcotics Anonymous, right? And like, a program I didn't believe in when I came here. I did not come here going, oh, yeah, like I said, like, I'm so excited to be a member, right? You know, I didn't like people. I'm still not, like, that people-y. He's very much, he's people-y. I'm a lot less people-y. But I did not like people at all, right? So to come and have to sit in a room and get to know other people and build relationships and develop connections and talk to other people, and especially other women, you know, I didn't think was in the cards for me. Like, this shit doesn't work. But it does, right? Like, it works, because here we are, you know? And then, like, you know, my friend here, Marisha, when she talked about, you know, traveling together. So travel started for us after those first two losses. Like, we had no money, and a friend had some money. So she came into a bit of money, and she's like, hey, you guys should go away on a trip. I'm going to lend you some money. Maybe you should go to Mexico. We went to Mexico. We paid her back, and 6 months later, I was there by myself. Right? You know, so, like, and then that's just continued. But when we go, where are we going? We're going to Narcotics Anonymous conventions. We're not just going to go lay on a beach and, like, soak up the sun and have some fun. We're going to Narcotics Anonymous conventions, because everywhere I go, my recovery comes with me. So if I can show up somewhere and recovery is happening, you bet your damn ass I'm going to be there, right? Because that's the shit that saved my life, right? You know, I continue to be of service, to give back, to, yeah, I've been on a convention committee for probably about 16 years. Every year I tell myself I'm done, right? Every year I'm still there, right? But the committee members sometimes change, sometimes they grow, they shift, you know, and I get to develop new connections, more relationships, you know, stay in the middle, you know, like this stuff. So if you're showing up here and you're doing what I did when I got here, and you're just coming to a meeting and then you're leaving, right? Like, you're ripping yourself off from the gifts of what Narcotics Anonymous has to offer, right? It offers fellowship, connection, the 12 steps, right? Like, the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous changed my thinking, my belief. It gave me that that self-worth. I've let go of guilt, shame, fucking fear, well, sometimes, right? You know, that hatred that I had for myself when I came here, I fucking hated myself. Like, what kind of a person, like, lets their children be taken from them and never does a goddamn thing to get them back because I wanted to get high, right? What kind of a person does that? That shit ate me up for so long. It was a catalyst that kept me using every time I stopped, right? Guess what? It doesn't eat me up anymore, right? It doesn't eat me up. I have relationships with my four other kids, all in different various degrees, right? I just went to Mexico for 9 days with my oldest son, right? My oldest child. Like, what a gift that was. He was very annoying, very difficult to deal with, right? Really was. And then for the first few days, I was like, oh, man, I don't know if I can share a room and spend, like, this time with him. And then I shifted my perspective. And it was like, oh, my God, I get to spend 9 days in Mexico sharing this with my son. A child that was removed from my care when I was 8 years old. Or I was 8. I started really early. That was removed from my care when he was 8 years old, and I never got him back. And I got to spend and show him around one of my most favorite places. Like, what a gift. And I was going to spend it sitting in my shit, going, man, this kid's annoying. Man, he's negative. Man, all he talks, like, you know, like, I was going to spend it like that. And I'm just so grateful for the 12 Steps in Narcotics Anonymous, because it took one phone call, a little bit of gratitude, and it was like, oh, my God, you get to do this. Like how what a beautiful experience. And the rest of the trip turned out amazing. We got ourselves into some kerfuffles and some interesting moments, and, yeah, it was such a good time, and, like, what a blessing, right? We get to show up for grandkids. Like, some of those children that were taken away and never got back, they were adopted, ran away from home and decided to come live with me, and those 6 weeks clean. She's now got 1,000 children, pretty much. And we get to pick them up, and they get to sleep over at our house, and we get to take them on trips, and we get to do all these fun things because their parents can't do it, right? Like, she doesn't have the capability to do it, and we get to offer that. Like, what a beautiful gift that came out of losing my kids, never having for 16 years, right? I never saw these children. Like, what a beautiful gift, right? So, like, this is Narcotics Anonymous in action for me, right? No one promised me that I would get my kids back in my life. No one promised me I would get to travel. No one promised me anything but freedom from active addiction, right? And then these things get to happen, right? I get to build these connections with my kids, my grandchildren, right? Shouldn't even have them in my life. They shouldn't even want to talk to me. But they do. Right? But they do. You know? Like holy shit. You know what I mean? They didn't come back into my life until they were pretty much adults. But they're here because I stayed clean and I continued to do the stuff that Narcotics Anonymous told me to do when I made that decision December 1st, 2009. Right, to surrender to the program and to just fucking listen, right? You know, the gifts, the freedom is in here, the freedom is in here, right? It's not in all the shit that I do or have or whatever, but it's in here and it's in here. It's how I feel today, right? It's my perspective shift, how I think today, right? So, man, I'm grateful for Narcotics Anonymous, and Marcel, you can end. Thank you.
You know, when I ended up in Penticton on that beach, God blessed me. God blessed me that day with a life full of adventure that never would have happened before. Like, it never would have happened. You know, like, before, like, I have an ex-wife. Obviously, like, I have children that aren't hers, so there was someone else. And when she cheated on me,
not me,
it bolted my life in another direction. and I ended up in Penticton, where I got blessed. In all of those experiences in the last almost 18 years have brought us here today in Edmonton for the 40th convention of Narcotics Anonymous. Like, there's been a lot of pain. There's been a lot of pain. But through that pain, I'm telling you, I've grown, and I've grown a lot. Right? Like, Narcotics Anonymous has helped me become a better parent to grandchildren. Grandchildren that have never seen me use, and just for today, never will. And this fucking thing's available to us all. I just gotta go get it. Narcotics Anonymous works. But if I don't work, it doesn't work for me. And I can blame it. Ah, that fucking shit doesn't work. Because before 2008, like I went to meetings, like in New Brunswick and in New West, and I wasn't in it. When I made a decision in 2008 to be in it, I was in it to win it. And I was in it to stay fucking clean and committed. And when Narcotics Anonymous says, "Marcel, can you help?" I say yes. And I don't just say yes for today. If it's a year commitment, I take the year and I commit. And I've also been on, I love coming here. Because you guys have our banners. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of our banners, and some of them have my name on them. And that was the 4th time I went to a convention. That was the 5th time. That was the 1st time. And I remember the 1st time. I was 9 months clean, and there was a bunch of you there, and we were all sitting at a campfire. And for the 1st time in my life, I thought, I'm at a campfire. And no one's throwing any bottles. No one's fighting. We're all getting along. And it's like, fuck this, I'm in. Where do I sign up for this convention? And I've been on this convention committee minus 1 year, or maybe 2. And I think I've done all of the positions. I'm trying to find one that I haven't done so that I can go back next year and do it. But I don't know. Oh, fuck, I've been secretary. I was the best damn secretary. And you know what? So just a backstory. So I got a job, with a window cleaner. His name is Brendan. And we're going to a job. And, I realized that it was the business meeting. And I'm like, fuck, I got to go to the meeting because, there's a business meeting and I got to be there. I'm the secretary. No, we got to go to work. Yeah, but no one can do it like me. Because that's the shit. And he said, "No, you're right. No one can do it like you. But the next person can do it like them. And it'll be okay." Right? Because I needed to just let it go. Right? Because it was someone else's turn. So before Gary comes and says you're done, 5 minutes? Or 1 minute? Okay, 5 minutes. All right. I'll take 1 minute. This is what I want to do. So this afternoon, someone asked if there was a newcomer in the room, and someone stood up. Is this guy still here? It was a girl? Can you please stand up? Oh, okay. Well, everybody else stand up and make some noise. Some noise. Make her feel welcome. Make her feel loved like I was fucking loved. Don't stop. You got about 4 minutes. Take the time. Welcome. I love you. So that's about wraps it up for me. I don't know about you.
I only want to say one last thing.
One more. Has anybody ever heard that?
So we were talking today. So when we were talking about when we met and how long we've been clean, we were striving at one point to be clean just as long as we used together. And we've been clean twice as long together than we used together. Like, what a fucking miracle. That's all I had to say. I told you. 1 minute.
Okay.
Now you're gone.
Okay. So I'm grateful that I'm clean today. And I'm grateful. We found out the other day that a member from Kelowna lost a child to suicide. And we can help. We can help. And that's the greatest gift, because we've been through it and we can help. We have an experience. And I love that. That's it. I'm done.
Thank you.